Stephen French. Stephen is a software engineer at Microsoft Two, and he's living near Austin, Texas. And he's talking about the SMB3 POSIX extensions.
Okay, does the volume works? Okay, as we talk about the POSIX extensions today, I do have to recognize a point Tom Talpe made, that no more bike shedding, 10 years is enough, or 8 years, or 5 years, or whatever it was. We've been talking about these for a long time. The funny thing is that although, you know, Jeremy and others have had minor disagreements, almost all of us are in violent agreement, Jeremy, Aurelian, and I, Tom, whatever, about certain of these points. There was a talk we gave at SNIA in the fall about server perspective and client perspective, and I'd say in about 9 out of 10 cases, the client guys and server guys would agree. And most of the disagreements are very small. So this is not a super controversial set of extensions, but the beauty of this, and so if we want to go back to Tom's comment about this taking a long time, the beauty of this is it keeps shrinking, and that's a good thing. Small extensions are good. We allow room for later changes, maybe some Azure requirement or some requirement for NetApp or some requirement for some workload. It's not a bad thing that they're currently small. But the other thing I want to comment about is the last 2 or 3 weeks, we've been testing like crazy. And it's not just me and Jeremy, Aurelien. Others have been testing this stuff. It's actually getting some exercise now. And just before the talk, I finishing off a makedir change for makedir with the POSIX extensions. We've made a lot of progress. In 2 weeks, hopefully we'll be able to demo even more. Okay. So let's talk about the first obvious question. What is POSIX? You know, working at IBM for many years, I met people who were on the POSIX committee. I think Jeremy and Tom and you guys have all met somebody or other in your career who's helped define this. But I was shocked. Like, we know that Linux is not the same. The Linux API is not the same as POSIX API. And of course, in Samba, the developers are used to dealing with BSD and other things. But in a sense, it's a little bit of a myth. We don't really care about POSIX that much. Just for grins, I looked at the POSIX API. And maybe there's a better number you could pull up, but it looked like about 100 calls for POSIX. Then I looked at the syscall table for Linux. Linux kernel syscall table is a tiny bit bigger. Okay, so when we talk about POSIX, sometimes we're really talking about the modern OS, whatever that is, that started with POSIX but has more stuff now.
Yeah, 1990.
Yeah, exactly. And even in 1990, I suspect there were OS with more calls, AIX and BSD and all that. But I do want to like remind you guys that although we use the word POSIX, and I am using it as a mount option, and I do generically mean whatever the standard thing is, the number of calls we're talking about really is technically not POSIX, it's bigger. Okay, so what's the goal? We want Linux apps to work. I don't care what your app is, some SQL database, whatever. We don't really want you to know that it's on a network file system. There may be some cases where we have to compromise, but in general, like block devices shouldn't really care that much about who supplied the block device, much like a file system really shouldn't care whether it's EXT4 or ButterFS or NFS or SMB3. So we have some common situations we need to fix. And we also have to deal with this really horrible thing. SIFS is being deprecated. And we really, really want to get around this problem that people think SMB3, Samba is insecure. SMB3 and Samba is very secure. Windows is very secure. SMB3.1.1 is an excellent protocol for security. But to do this, to deprecate SIFS, we break customers because we had Unix extensions that SCO, HP, and others developed in the 90s. Jeremy and I and others, there's a document in SNIA for it. We've extended multiple times. The SIFS worked nicely with Samba. A lot of apps worked. These SIFS protocol extensions don't work with SMB3, so apps break when we force users to go to SMB2.1 or SMB3 or SMB3.1.1. were breaking some customers who had POSIX semantics that used to work. So this, we can't say, you know, oh, use SIFs for security reasons. We can't do that, but we do need to make sure these Unix extensions work and quickly. Okay. Now, today, Jeremy has a tree on samba.org. Aurelian has some Pyke code, test code. With the Linux kernel in there, I don't want to add controversial stuff. And I don't want anything turned on by default. But you can at least test open and make dirt create. So it's, we're not going to put in everything yet. There's more work that has to be done. But the non-controversial things, this may change. So, you know, your mileage may vary on this. But there are things you could try today to Jeremy's tree. It requires mounting with 3.1.1 because we need negotiate contacts. And not just mounting with 3.1.1, but if you also need to specify POSIX on the mount. And there are only a few limited protocol features that you can test without, you know, special patches. I don't want to test, put in things that are going to get reverted and change. But some of this I needed to do for reasons that maybe you guys don't care about, but some of it has to do with, I don't want the backport of this, which I suspect some of the distros will want, to have some merge conflict issues with create context and such. Okay, so what does this look like to you today? If you took this code, you know, today what's in the kernel and mounted to Jeremy's code, if you look, you have two mounts there, one with POSIX and one without POSIX. So you can see POSIX on one, and the other one says no Unix above it. And then if you look at the debug data, if you look under the features, you see POSIX is listed, and also number of, next to number of credits, you see dialect 3.1.1 and POSIX. So the dialect 3.1.1 and POSIX means the server responded and said it could support POSIX. On the mount, though, it's not turned on by default. So you see one mount where I've turned it on and one mount where I didn't. So if you mount it to one, I'm going to send the create context. You mount to the other, I'm not. So the server had to respond for me to try POSIX on the mount, or for me to, you know, accept it on the mount. Okay, so what have we tried today? Well, this week. Couple common things. What if you want to create a set of files with different modes? The test case was creating four files, but I changed it to three because we were masking one set. So if you look at these three files, the upper set is to a POSIX mount, simultaneous, the lower one is mounting to the same server, but without POSIX. So the only difference was the mount option POSIX on the two. If you look at the upper one, the mode bits were correct. 0700 file had 0700 mode, 775 had 775. If you look at the other, what it gets is the default mode for the mount. You could also do SIFSACL if you want. The mode would be emulated based on the ACL. But the default is that we map the mode bits to a default you can specify on the mount. Or with SIFSACL, you can try to retrieve them from the ACL. But with the POSIX thing, you're getting them exactly what we set, you know, minus whatever got masked off on the server. So in this case, I didn't mask off anything on the server. So I have create mask set to 777. Currently, Jeremy and I are looking at a problem where the last, so creating a 777 file would end up with 775. And also currently, the sticky bit and set UID are masked off. That may change. So the other thing that's important to realize is that even building the kernel fails today to Samba without this, without SIFS Unix. Because even building the kernel, you have duplicate file names that differ only in case. If you look at what we did here, I did a make dir of upper and touch lowercase file name with same name. I tried it on both mounts, the POSIX with and without. With POSIX, as you can see here, you have a file named upper and a directory named upper, differ only in case it worked. When I try to the non-POSIX share, the touch of upper affected the directory rather than creating a new file. So POSIX worked, non-POSIX didn't work. So this didn't create a new file. So this is what you're dealing with in, you know, POSIX app today. They're expecting this to create a file, and it doesn't. But with Jeremy's server tree, everything works fine. You can create files that have the same name, the different case, you could build the kernel. So this is a very good thing, and took 4 patches total. One for negotiate context, one for the new mount option. Actually, 3 patches total, I'm sorry. And then the third one was the open context. Now, this is a little bit more confusing, but it's fascinating and probably a little hard to read. So I include this because I want to mention it's not just about POSIX semantics. It's also about stupid, weird behavior that's hard to explain to customers. So let's say, for argument's sake, you wanted to rename a file. So for this test, it's a little hard to read, but on the right-hand side at the top, I've run tail on some file named target file just to keep it open. So I've done tail to keep open a file. And on the left, what I've done is a rename of, you know, empty file onto this target file. And it may be hard to read, but I get a permission denied trying to do a rename. Okay, that makes sense. The file is open. SMB semantics require it's going to fail, right? Now, here's what gets very confusing. If you look at the bottom of that, after the rename fails, tail comes back with an error. So it's not just about, yeah, we got POSIX semantics. This is Windows semantics. Okay, you could live with that. But tail broke, right? Like when you renamed it, something happened to tail. So it's confusing to the customer. So if you look at the bottom, it's a very easy example. Here, you're mounting with POSIX. Notice POSIX, okay? We're mounting to Jeremy's tree here with POSIX. This one above was mounted to the same server, but without POSIX. Now I did a move of empty file onto target, opened by tail, no error, worked fine, POSIX, everything's fine, you know, we're happy, Jeremy's code worked. Now, what are the details? This is not super complicated, guys. Jeremy and others have beaten into our head. Let's make it simple. So what do we have here? We have a negotiate request with a reserve field for the future in case we screw up, and it's padded because we want it. I'm selfish here. I want to pad it because that way I don't have to worry about the order of the lease context and the, you know, durable handle context and all that, because they have to be on a certain alignment. So the only reason I'm padding this thing is to make sure they're aligned properly, so I don't care what order these things go in. But this allows you for, you know, some version field or whatever you want in the future. But literally, all it is 100 hex. This is a signal to the server. This is a request. Do you understand POSIX? Open context. So this is negotiate protocol. And it's super complicated what we got back. A context. That's it. Not padded, unfortunately, but still. That's all there is. At this point, now I know I can send it open. So I get my POSIX semantics on open. What does POSIX semantics on open give us? Case sensitivity, rename of open files, delete of open files. POSIX locking semantics. This is good. There's a lot of things here. And all we're sending is 2 tiny things. POSIX, negotiate context, and here we have our create. Now, this tag, GUID created, Tom was asking about how Jeremy created that. This was a, you know, generate the GUID here. You can see it down here. I think I highlighted the wrong one, but you can see it down here. There's really not much in it. It's got the mode. And that's about it. So on a create, the mode's relevant. On anything else, the mode's irrelevant. So what about the response? Response is a little bit bigger. And it's variable length. So it is a little bit confusing to parse because it's variable length. But I'll get into that. It's not that complicated. So if you look at the create, it already included a lot of stuff. It included most of what we want. So what it's in this is stuff we need, metadata we need, but we don't get back from the standard Windows create response. Now, I'll get back to the structure of that in a minute. Without the extensions, I don't want to go through a demo here so we don't run out of time, but without the extensions, what would work that's POSIX related, that's mysterious? One is you can map file names, just like the Mac does, just like Windows services for Mac as well does, colons, backslashes, special characters, there's a few dozen of them now. You can map these specially. You can handle symlinks, they're emulated. They're only visible on the client, but you can handle symlinks a couple different ways, actually. But you can't get that POSIX advisory locking, you can't get the case sensitivity, and you can't get the open, you can sometimes get renamed to work, but not, you know, open and delete of open files will often fail. So what are the other alternatives? You have AAPL. So we talked about this a little bit, SNIA. So yes, it's a good thing. Samba supports AAPL, right? The Apple context. There's a VFS module for this. It doesn't do all of the semantics you need, though. So it'd be nice for a fallback, but it's not everything you need. And here's an example of the response, what it looks like in a Wireshark trace. So what was the other alternative? Well, the SIFS extension. Well, what was wrong with it? Well, SIFS deprecation, WannaCry. SMB3 is better in a lot of ways. And the Apple, although it does handle case sensitivity, it doesn't handle all the POSIX compatibility issues we wanted with the Apple context. So from, you know, this is at the SNIA conference, we talked about, well, what do I need? I need to do things, not just compile the kernel, but I need SMB3 to be bigger than the SIFS Unix extensions from a functional point of view. I need everything to work that used to work. We don't want to go backwards. And did I mention the APIs are changing? So I got an email from Dave Howells a couple days ago. Oh, the mount API is changing. Oh, FSinfo API is changing. These are good. We want these. Sometimes it's exposing SMB features. But Linux kernel is evolving. The proc interface changed 2 days ago. Christoph Helwig changed in a patch, checked in a patch. Syscalls change. We add new syscalls. There will be times when we're going to have to add this protocol. And so we do need to think about, okay, 3 years from now, 4 years from now, these optional features, how they might, whether they require a new dialect or not, hopefully not, but this is something, you know, Linux is evolving. So what are my challenges? Create, rename, delete, we talked about that, open files. Being able to return metadata that's not just mode bits, but any POSIX metadata. POSIX advisory locking. It's not used as much as you think, and the model is terrible, but there are apps that do advisory locking. And then StatFS returns some additional fields. You know, if you want to go back to the earlier presentations, I actually list each of the fields that are not returned. Now, back to Jeremy's presentation. I don't know if you want to do this or want me to put it in your words. Okay, so one of the things Jeremy presented at SNIA was from the server perspective, security issues are paramount. He's lost more sleep than you can imagine due to symlinks. Symlinks are a four-letter word for Samba. Now, we don't want server-followed symlinks. It may affect NFS interoperability, but you know, it's really dangerous to have server-followed symlinks. Current plan is client-followed one. But there is some difficulty here. Some NFS-created symlinks will be visible in the short term. May not be usable, but they may be visible. Also, minimum changes, smaller the better, because that allows us to review the Samba code and be much more confident about security. And more about symlinks here. Server following symlinks is a holdover from the dark ages. Let's not do it if we can avoid it. Yes?
Steve, can you go back one slide? Yeah. So this, the minimum necessary change thing, the reason that the POSIX create context incoming and outgoing are really small is what I did with some engineers at Microsoft is basically we sat down and went through, we looked at every single possible field that you might get back from a POSIX stat call of all the information that you need. And then we looked at all the possible information levels that you get back from a standard Windows create context open reply. And then we only added the fields into the POSIX create context that didn't already exist in the existing Windows create context. So that's what I mean there by minimum necessary change. In that if there was metadata returned by Windows that already covered the same information that we were going to need in POSIX, don't duplicate it in any POSIX info levels or create context. Mm-hmm. Only add the pieces that were missing, the minimum necessary changes that you needed to get the full POSIX semantics back. And what that means is that one of the mistakes that were made in the original SMB1 Unix extensions was to expose UIDs and GIDs on the wire. Mm-hmm. Which have no meaning to the client and only have meaning to the server. So now, in line with Windows protocol semantics, everything is SIDS. Whatever we return back, if we return a file owner, it's or a group or whatever, everything is a SID. No more exposing UIDs or GIDs. We expose the mode because you can manipulate that directly, but everything else is done via ACL, GET, and SET calls. So that does mean that right now, POSIX ACLs don't quite work. The other final issue that we've yet to resolve is, we know how we're going to do symlinks. That's some hard code to write server side. The only other missing feature is extended attributes right now are still case insensitive, even mm-hmm. over POSIX.
Yeah, and the other one is
not
empty,
sure.
Empty.
There's empty EAs, which... Yeah. So the two issues with EAs are Linux allows EAs with no content, Windows doesn't. And the other one is EAs on Linux are case sensitive, on Windows they're case insensitive. Well, I'm not sure whether those are worth adding new changes, protocol changes to allow them. Mainly because... I have never seen a Linux application that depends on different case extended attributes.
I think there's one test case that breaks because of it, but the other much more common.
Do they actually create two EAs with different case names? Same name, different case.
I thought so. One of the things that we talked about in the SMB3 talk, the Linux kernel client talk, was Ronnie and some guys at Red Hat have been doing nice work expanding some of the things that I had done with. Expanding some things that I had done relating to XFS testing, and they're documenting there's an exclude list now for XFS test, and the reason for the exclusion is now listed for some of these tests, and before I had them in a wiki page and it was hard to read. So now if you're running XFS test and you look at the exclude test, don't run these test list, you have the bug number for some of them and you have the reason. And I remember the reason for one of them is the case sensitivity. But there's a much more common example that we ought to at least remember. One of the motivations for NFS 4.2 was to support a special form of EA that's used for security, SE Linux. Today, we only support the user namespace. So security, trusted, SE Linux related EAs are not supported. Which is a problem. I mean, it was enough of a motivation to do NFS 4.2, right? So it was part of NFS 4.2. Something we can talk about, and I think that that's something we can resolve between now and SNIA without a particularly big issue. And I don't want to like overemphasize how big those are. These are relatively small. Coming back to a point he made, which I thought was very important, was the stat example. So in earlier talks years ago, we had the list of fields that were returned, but I think what's very, very confusing to people is that they see it from like Samba's perspective, right? This is what stat looks like. That's not what the kernel returns. So the kernel structure for, you know, stat or statfs could be different than what you see in user space. The stat call in Unix, for example, still, it's weird. Like the stat call returns create time as empty when you run it on Linux, but works on BSD, yet the actual API call that it's supposed to call in Linux would have returned that and other things. So like the statx call has evolved So it actually has more fields to come back. So we have to be a little bit careful that what we're talking about is not the user space call, it's the kernel call. Because some of these user space calls, libc hasn't caught up yet with the kernel. Okay, so we can have simultaneous windows and Unix handles. These create contexts if we want, may not want to have that. I think you saw lots of examples I just had of two mounts, one POSIX, one non-POSIX to the same server. And we are expecting, obviously, there'll be servers where case sensitivity is possible on one share and not another. And we may be able to do that fairly easily by, Samba will always support it, but maybe some Windows server or Mac server, if you're running on a file system that can't do it, you could return a tree connect context. Samba ignores it, no problem, it always supports it. But we will have cases where, servers may have to say, no, I can support it on this share, but not this share. That's one piece of feedback I've heard multiple times. Okay, one new info level. This isn't much. One new info level. One create context. One negotiate context. And per handle behavior. So what does it actually look like? The POSIX context, 0x100. Maybe later a version. Right now it's zero. It's a reserved field. Tree connect context, you don't have to return. We don't send it yet. Nobody asked for it. Maybe in the future we will. POSIX create context. Gives you case sensitivity, POSIX unlink rename, advisory locking. And actually, one of the things we have to remember once again is we talk about advisory locking. It's actually OFD locks, right? So there's a link that describes what OFD locks are. Jeff Layton, we can blame for some of that. Remember Jeff Layton from the Samba team? We do also need to verify the file mapping thing. One of the things that Jeremy and I need to make sure that we're not remapping them twice. Because today, by default, I think you saw on the mount options, we're remapping colon and backslash and things like that. You don't really need to do any of the remapping. It has a little bit of an implication for alternate data streams and some other things if we ever do this to Windows. But I think it's important to realize that the remapping isn't really supposed to be necessary. And maybe at some point we can offer UTF-8 on the wire. I think that would make Jeremy and me both happier if we had UTF-8 on the wire. So what else? The hard links use the standard Windows call. Same links are client-only. There's a couple different ways to do it today. And things that are popular Unix extensions like fallocator, about 90% mapping or 80% mapping today. We may have to come back, though, for the last 10 or 20% for applications that are doing virtualization and some of the media apps that require these strange fallocate behaviors, because fallocate and the equivalent in Windows are slightly different semantics. So these are not perfect match, but we can come back to that later. This is nowhere near as important as the rename, delete, and case sensitivity. And we don't want to like bike shed this thing into another 8 years. So if you support the POSIX context, return it on. Now, what does it look like? The response has number of hard links, because that's not something that comes back from Windows. It has flags, which basically indicates whether it's a reparse point. That way we can figure out, I guess, if it's a FIFO or, that was the point, I think, right? To figure out if it's a FIFO or a symlink.
That, I think that actually, that the flags may be the reparse time.
It's the reparse tag itself, okay. Yeah, so that we can use that reparse tag to indicate the type of non-file or directory object. So we know it's a file or directory, but...
It's not flagged, it's actually a tag.
Okay, so I'll fix that in the slide. So think about this. We know it's a file, we know it's a directory. What we don't know is what about special file types, so reparse tag. The permissions take out the file type, but basically that's the mode bits. The mode bits minus things like whether it's a file. Also, I want you to think about the owner for a second. When you think about clustering, a lot of you guys have dealt with clusters. It's a real disaster if user one is different on two nodes in the cluster, right? And it's very likely that if you do things wrong, you could end up with user one being different on two different servers, much less thousands of different clients. So if you're in a domain, this SID is going to be basically a domain and a user ID merged into one. The SID is unique across the world, right? But What's beautiful about this is, let's say you're not joined Active Directory. Well, we support the S-1-whatever for the Unix UID. If you want to return a Unix UID, you can. And just pray it's consistent across your servers and clients. But this allows you to have a consistent UID mapping model that works. We're used to already, we know how to do this already. We know how to map UIDs. If your server doesn't support Active Directory, it doesn't, well, return the Unix UID. Samba can already do this, and the client can already recognize that.
One question. You mentioned there that the size of the SID is variable. I would go for the SIDs with a constant buffer. So in a lot of protocols, the SID is just a 28-byte buffer, which can, and inside Samba, we are using it also like that. It's not a variable, just the buffer was 28-byte.
I like that idea of not having a variable size. You know, Jeremy's okay with that. But the point is that it's easier for me to deal with fixed length structures because of the alignment issue of these contexts.
So I mean, as far as I know, SIDs are variable size. Is there a max SID size that we can allow? Because, I mean, theoretically, a SID can be much longer, correct?
In Samba, we use 50 elements. And just 28 bytes.
Okay, so we could fix that. Yeah, the reason I made them variable was essentially that's how SIDs are normally encoded on the wire. So I didn't want to have to change. Because you have to parse SIDs anyway as variable length. So I assumed that code would already exist. Okay. Metz, if you can point me at some of our code that linearizes as fixed size, I'm happy to change those to fixed size instead. If we can guarantee that any SID that can be fixed can be put inside that buffer, I'm okay with them being fixed. I originally wanted them to be fixed, but I...
From my perspective, it's easier if they're aligned, so I don't have to think about alignment. And fixed size.
I'm happy with that, but I just need to know what that size is and what the encoding mechanism is in order to put that in. And I can change that in the server really quickly. So.
Okay, so create context. We have a create tag defined, we talked about. Although I'm a little puzzled where my display disappeared to. Maybe if I go back into presentation mode. So I can find where my mouse. Okay, so now it's happier. So the tag, I don't think is much controversial here. The proposed info level, as you can see, the info level is really easy to understand conceptually. It returns the stuff we're used to, and then that POSIX create context info. So that POSIX create context info, the combination of the two, stuff you can already get from SMB and the POSIX create can come back in one info level on query info and eventually redir. We also have the StatFS, that's a TBD on StatFS. Now, we also have some wonderful stuff that's going on. Like, to me, reading the Samba code was actually kind of painful because Jeremy had a fairly large set of patches. So trying to find it, and the way he defined structures is a little bit different, but it was easier to look at Wireshark. So I don't know if you want to come up, show anything, if you got anything you want to show, but Aurelian's been doing some good work with some Pike test code. So he's got this tree I think you can see here. He's also got the dissector here. And before... I also want to mention that we're going to continue debugging this, hopefully today, but also there's in Redmond in a few weeks, we've got the event, and then of course in the SNIA test event, and obviously, you know, this is an emergency, getting POSIX extensions in. I get so many complaints about, you know, disabling SIFs has broken my apps, right? So So this is kind of an emergency, getting the stuff going as quickly as we reasonably can, safely, with good testing. I'm really glad about the test cases. And we got these two test events to work on, and we desperately want more and more eyes on this code. The good news is, really, this is three things. A negotiate context, low risk, open context, low risk, with the mode bits, and then the new info level. There isn't a lot of change on the client side. The server side is a lot more, but it's not that big. Okay, but let's take a look at the Wireshark example, and something that's more fun than looking at slides, looking at actual working code. By the way, do we have any questions while we're plugging this in? Or Jeremy, any additional comments while we're...
You're running XLS tests on?
1, 2, 2? Okay.
You started to do that today or tomorrow. I had to get Maker working, which is about 10 minutes away from finishing.
There's a part of
it. It builds, actually.
So I have a trace here, so I can show you, I guess, the. New context here, which is properly, it says POSIX, and yeah, it's all zero for now. I've created a file with reserved characters, so you can see the response is successful. So if you expand the create request, you can see the extra info. There's the permission here. And in the response, you see number of links, parse tag, permission, and the two SIDs, the owner and the group. So you can see at the end of the owner SID, the UID, I guess, 1,000. And in the group, same thing, 100 here. I did a find on the directory afterwards. And in the response, you can see the two files created here. So yeah, all the fields Steve described earlier, file attributes, inode, ID, yeah. Yeah, that's it.
What do you
file name? Yeah. What's legal about that? It doesn't contain a zero.
Yeah, legal, just
and no slash.
So in terms of getting this into mainline Samba and shipping, I'm not sure when we're planning to ship 4.9. Does anyone know if there's a plan for 4.9? But if it's, yeah, I'm sure Caroline has a date for it. But if it's you know, 6 months or so out, then it's possible that we could put these things into 4.9 and make the POSIX extensions in SMB2 for 4.9. If not, then maybe we'll call it Samba 5 when we ship those things. So
this is the question for all of you guys. Where will the extension be published? Is it RFC ITF or it will be a different...
So the reason we didn't think about RFC was
just the delays. I think you saw NFS taking 7 years between eight years. But we do have the wiki page. We do want to make sure it's documented. We are perfectly willing to consider. Tom had some really good ideas, I think, on it. Whether the official documentation is RFC, eventually that's fine. But in the short term, a wiki...
Can't make that.
All the information is in the wiki. We will have the structure definitions nicely. We want to make sure that the, you know, we can get, make sure that those numbers get reserved so we don't accidentally have them, you know. So MSSMB2, hopefully we can at least mention them. I don't know. Maybe that's not legal. We'll find out. I'll ask Tom about it. But in the terms of the format, in the short term, it's all in the wiki. And in the longer term, we do need to be more...
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good point. You need to make it work first. So, you know, we've talked about this before. Microsoft is willing to publish this protocol informatively, right? Whether Microsoft products implement this protocol, that's TBD, right? We're actually very interested in it. This would be really, really important, as I said this morning, to cloud service for Linux guests, right? We would love to see this. However, there's a bunch of questions that need to be answered. The IP ownership in the spec is an important one. The interoperability of the spec, whether all people who want to implement it feel comfortable that they can implement it. The frozen nature of the spec, right? A wiki is great for drafting and stuff like that, but it could change overnight. And, you know, these protocols need to be very, yeah, the SIDS, you know, the numbers, the reservation numbers. There's a whole lot of stuff that we have to be sure is stable and understood, its ownership and its provenance understood before we move to that step. I would support putting it in Samba as an experimental feature. I would not want it to harden in the field because people started to use it. So you can't change it now. I've started to use it. That's a real danger. But you understand that. Well, of course, and they should, right? That so the IETF, I have more thoughts about the IETF. So the IETF has a special status for this, experimental, which allows protocols to go out and be tested and, you know, prove your assumptions, right? Does it really do what you said? What things haven't you found? They're allowed to change. In fact, they don't move to a full internet standard without that process. RFC. So the IETF doesn't own SMB3. Right? So it's very unlikely to want to own an extension to SMB3, right? So the IETF is a great way to publish, a great way to get comments. You can do an internet draft, publish it independently, party on kind of a thing. But it's probably not the right area. That said, RFCs can move very quickly. They don't have to move slowly. If there's good consensus, they'll move quickly, right? If they're contentious or if nobody can decide what they should have, NFS42X, you know, then of course they take forever. That's what happens, right? So I think this could work a lot better, and I'd love to see this quickly converge to an industry standard that everybody can get behind.
And I think you've got to be a little careful about worrying too much about, like, for example, RFC Samba deals with RFCs that are draft and broken. A good example is 2307 versus 2307 bis. I mean, they're both, neither are standards, but they're different.
2307, the LDAP representation of user IDs?
Yeah, and that's not an official standard. But there's also two versions of this that are different. RFC 2307 and RFC 2307 bis.
If you want to use somebody else's spec, go for it. What I'm trying to get at is that
there's two IETF whatevers that differ for this, and this is one that Samba deals with, right? So there's a precedent for dealing with this kind of stuff. I think we'll know in 2 or 3 weeks whether we're 90% there. We'll know by SNIA this fall whether we're 98% of the way there. Getting code out there that it's experimental, that people use and then complain about, as long as it's not the defaults. But one thing I'm getting from all this is that there are so many things we don't know about how databases work and about how certain apps work. We do have to get more, it has to be easy to test. One of the reasons that I put it out there, but two things are required to turn it on. Maybe Samba, it's the same way, you got to turn on two things to enable it. So you really know what you're doing. Because obviously you don't want to be saying this is not hardened, this could change tomorrow.
I can't control what my OEMs are doing.
Yeah, exactly.
So we talked about this a while back. I mean, an excellent goal in my mind would be to support all the apps that NFS supports today.
Yep.
Right? And you could maybe do a better job than NFS and support a few things that NFS doesn't do so well, right? The goal is POSIX extensions support POSIX apps. Maybe it supports a little more than POSIX apps. I don't know. But you should have that sort of NFSI view as a minimum basis.
I think we should be very careful about assuming that NFS did it right. I think, Aurelien, you were talking about an example. Somebody was talking about an example where NFS did it wrong for some mode bits. There are lots of cases where NFS has messed up. And you know, the beauty of all this is that we can do really well with a small set.
Thank you. So my concern about getting this upstream is that we need a very deep and detailed test suite and nail down the behaviors. What happens if one handle is open with Windows semantics and one with POSIX semantics? What works and what not? And all these details need to be completely tested and agreed on.
I agree. Some of this sounds intuitive, and you know these are very good to do. I think what I was surprised about was we already have some test code. Obviously, SMB torture we need as well, but
XFS test
is necessary to figure out if it's as good as NFS or better.
Yeah.
XFS test is needed to tell when we for real POSIX. But I think that the corner cases that Metz is dealing with are a different type of corner case test.
So to be honest, getting it to pass the Linux-only tests where you're just doing POSIX handles is probably going to be reasonably easy. What Metz wants, and I agree with him, and I need a boatload of Samba client work there first, is to get the part where we open a connection, one POSIX handle, one Windows handle, and then we test the interactions between them simultaneously.
Now, the good news is Linux client will never do this.
Yes.
The Linux client on a tree,
but
so we could mount the same share twice,
but having said
it'd be a different TID.
Having said that, there are going to be a lot of cases where you've got Windows clients and Linux clients accessing the same share, the same files. The Linux guys will be using POSIX. The Windows guys will be using non-POSIX. We need to have something where we can write down how that interaction is supposed to work.
And I think the challenge may be sorting out how much of it is protocol and how much of it is server back-end implementation.
So what you're saying is you want to really solve the Unix to POSIX, Unix to Windows interop problem, finally, with all the logging semantics. I mean, I've tried to talk to the NFS guys for years.
Essentially, we already have solved it because the interaction between those handles, the SMB1 handles and the Windows handles over SMB1, is already well defined, at least in the Samba implementation. What we need to do is to write that, is to implement the same thing over SMB2, write down how we behave in those circumstances and put them out there for people to look at, for like the Microsoft Cloud implementers like Dave Grohl or whatever, to take a look at it and say, is that a reasonable thing for those two handle interactions to do? Because right now, all of that knowledge is encoded inside the Samba server code, and what we need is to have it out there as a document that people can actually look at and say, is that a sensible way of dealing with it?
You're right now solving the hard part of an NFS v4 server, right? You're solving the hard part of writing an NFS v4 server inside Samba. Yeah, I mean, because
I don't want to have to deal with NFS. So. I can make it all work in SMB, I'll be happy.
Yeah, and let's remember something. During my talk earlier, I showed you NFS activity is declining, it seems, over the last 6 months, SMB activity is increasing. I don't know. Maybe something useful. We have an emergency, though, even without NFS, because we're forcing people away from things that worked. there were a surprising number of guys that used SIFS POSIX and were like, what the hell broke? Why? We got a little bit of an emergency here. How do we unregress those customers that we force regressed when we turned off SIFS? And not just Samba, obviously other people besides Samba implemented these.
Okay. Many thanks for the talk. Any more questions? Okay. Thank you.